came he to Derbe and Lystra, and behold, a certain disciple was there named Timotheus, the son of a certain woman which was a Jewess and believed, but his father was a Greek, who was well reported of by the brethren that were at Lystra and Iconium. Him would Paul have to go forth with him, and took and circumcised him because of the Jews which were in those quarters. For they knew all that his father was a Greek. And as they went through the cities, they delivered them the decrees for to keep that were ordained of the apostles and elders which were at Jerusalem. And so were the churches established in the faith and increased in number daily. And my God add his blessing to the reading of his precious word. I want to repeat something that we said yesterday morning in connection with the central portion of the Acts of the Apostles. It's something that really startled me. The statement was made that in a period of 5 years, in an area where the gospel never had been preached, a pagan population, and in 5 years, there were 4 provinces of the Roman Empire were evangelized. And in the strategic centers, New Testament churches were planted. And it all happened in a period of 5 years, from AD 49 till AD 54. That was when it happened. It was the life work of the Apostle Paul. Everything was pointing forward to this period, and after it took place, it just seemed that the Apostle Paul, after Acts chapter 20, and the tremendous address that he gave to the elders at Ephesus, we find that things tapered off from then on. A good part of his time from that period on was spent in prison. But in 4 provinces of the Roman Empire, the gospel had entered and New Testament churches were planted. Now that seems to be a period of God's blessing upon his people. And it was done in such a short time. I've been in the Lord's work for 65 years. But to think that in 5 years, 4 provinces of the Roman Empire, that the gospel had penetrated there and at the strategic centers, New Testament churches had been planted. It is a magnificent piece of work. As a matter of fact, it's Paul's life's work, all concentrated in a few chapters here in the center of the Acts of the Apostles. This is something that I've been thinking about very, very much in recent days. And the principles that we find here connected with church planting, I have been trying to get the thing straight in my mind and also to see how God is working and how it can be accomplished. The 4 provinces were, first of all, there was Galatia, and then secondly, there was Macedonia and Achaia, and then the province of Asia. In these 4 provinces of the Roman Empire, the gospel had penetrated, and it seemed at the end of that period, Paul's life work was complete. We know that when he was in prison, he wrote those magnificent epistles, and we thank God for them. But as we look at the Acts of the Apostles and think of these missionary journeys that the apostle took, I think that here we get a pattern that we can follow at the present time. Yesterday, in speaking about Paul's work in Galatia, I mentioned the fact that John Mark was a dropout. It was one of the difficulties. It was one of the sad things that happened on that first missionary journey. You know, when I use the term a dropout, I don't want to give the idea that that was the end of John Mark. As a matter of fact, it was a result of what John Mark did in abandoning the apostles when they were preaching the gospel in Galatia, that caused that rift between Barnabas and Paul at the end of chapter 15. A sad, sad, sad episode that is recorded in the Word of God. But that is not the end of the story. The Apostle Paul, he was very, very strong in his opinion about it, and he said, John Mark, he abandoned us. And he would not tolerate John Mark going on the second missionary journey. But that wasn't the end of the story. There are two lovely passages in the New Testament that shows that later on, John Mark recovered himself. There's a statement made in the epistle to Philemon, and also in the fourth chapter of the epistle to the Colossians, Paul speaks of John Mark as a fellow laborer. And then at the end of Paul's life, as he's speaking to Timothy, he said, Timothy, he said, come quickly, come before winter. And he said, when you come, bring John Mark, because he's profitable to me for the ministry. You know, it's perfectly true that at the beginning of John Mark's life, or his spiritual life, that episode happened, and he abandoned the apostles and went back right home to Jerusalem. But that wasn't the end of it. And thank God, he made a complete recovery. And what we would have missed if we didn't have that lovely, lovely gospel that John Mark wrote. You know, some people think that the bird with a broken wing will never recover. But he made a splendid recovery. And while he made that mistake at the beginning of his life, I think that at the end, he certainly had a wonderful comeback. Well, thank God for his gospel. As a matter of fact, the gospel according to Mark is the basic gospel. Any missionary who does translation work, he generally starts with the gospel according to Mark. It's the great foundational gospel. And we do thank God that this man that made a mistake at the beginning and left the work, yet through the grace of God and the help of the Apostle Peter, we think that he came back and made a wonderful recovery. So I just want to mention that because when I used the term that it was a dropout, I don't want to give people the idea that there wasn't a recovery. There was a splendid recovery in John Mark's life. So here, at the beginning of the second missionary journey, we find that Paul, and although he had lost the cooperation of his dear friend Barnabas, yet at the same time he chose Silas, and being commended by the church at Antioch, he set off on this second missionary journey. In chapter 16, 17, and 18, we get the second missionary journey of the Apostle Paul. And it is a thrilling story what happened during that time. First of all, when they started off, they went back over the ground where they had previously labored, and they established the saints and helped them in every possible way. But as they went along, we find that they were going in certain directions, and they wanted to go to Bithynia, and they wanted to go to Asia. But twice over, we read that the Spirit forbade them. They weren't allowed to go either to Bithynia, that was to be evangelized later, and as far as Asia was concerned, that was evangelized later as well. But the Holy Spirit of God guided them. You know, sometime when there's a closed door, and sometime when there's a blockage on the pathway of a servant of God, you know, it may seem that at the particular time, very disturbing and distressing. But sometimes when God blocks the way, by circumstances or by some other means, God has a purpose in it. And finally, they were driven by the Holy Spirit. They were driven north. And when they come to Troas, they see a vision in the night. A man of Macedonia that said, come over and help us. And then we get D-Day in Europe. They crossed over the Straits and they came to Philippi in Europe. And here we find at the beginning of that wonderful work of the establishment of a church in Philippi. After Philippi, of course, there was Thessalonica. And after Thessalonica, Paul went on to Athens and gave that wonderful address on Mars Hill. And then from Athens, he went to Corinth. And there in Corinth, a wonderful work was done after a period of 18 months working with his hands day after day and preaching the gospel. He left a New Testament church behind. So these chapters give the thrilling story. We're so familiar with them. But some of the things of very special interest that we find in the records, this is what has been occupying my mind. We find that before the set off, we find that a young man at Lystra, that is in the place where they had formerly worked in Galatia, a young man called Timothy, he had been converted at that time in the first missionary journey, and the fact that John Mark had dropped out, Timothy was chosen by the Apostle Paul to do the work that John Mark had abandoned. I want to occupy my time this morning with the record of two men that were involved in this tremendous work of evangelization in Macedonia and Achaia and in the establishment of these churches. Of course, the outstanding servant of God was the Apostle Paul. He was the leader. He was the pioneer missionary. But there were men associated with him. And it's two of these men that I want to look at this morning, because I want to apply them personally to ourselves. Now, the first one is Timothy, and what is said about him. Now, a second man that I want to look at, just for a short time, is a man that's not mentioned at all in the Acts of the Apostles, and that is Titus. Timothy and Titus. You remember that the pastoral epistles are written to these two men. We find a good deal in the Acts of the Apostles concerning Timothy. But the fact is that in the Acts of the Apostles, Titus's name is not mentioned at all. Many, many times I have wondered why. He certainly was involved in the work in this great second missionary journey. We find him in, for instance, in the controversy at Jerusalem concerning that problem that had arisen in Galatia. Titus is not mentioned in the Acts of the Apostles. If we were to take a concordance and look at his name, we'd find it occurs about 13 times. But the plain fact is that although he's involved in the work, his name is not mentioned in Acts at all. Now that was an enigma. It was a mystery to me for quite a long time. But in doing a little bit of reading, Sir William Ramsay and Dr. A.T. Robertson, they make the suggestion that Titus was a brother of Luke. There are two statements in the second epistle of the Corinthians. I'm not going to turn over them. One is in chapter 9, and I think the other in chapter 12, speaking there about a brother. And both Dr. A.T. Robertson and Sir William Ramsay suggest that there's a very great likelihood that Titus was a natural brother of Luke. Now, there's one thing about Luke. He never mentions his own name. He keeps his name completely out of the picture. Those two lovely books that he wrote, The Gospel According to Luke and the Acts of the Apostles, Luke never mentions his own name. He must have been a wonderful, wonderful person. The only way that we know that he was present at any particular situation is a change of a pronoun. In the Acts where we get the pronoun we did this, we did that, we did the other thing, we know that Luke was present. But when he changes the pronoun, they did this and they did that and they did the other thing, we know he was not there. There are three great passages in the Acts of the Apostles where we get the we, what are called the we passages. And we know that Luke was there, although he doesn't mention his name at all. A very diffident, self-effacing type of a person was Dr. Luke. And if it's true that Titus was his brother, I think that that is the reason that he doesn't mention him either. You know, there's some people, and they're continually talking about themselves and their own name. I, that great personal pronoun, you find it again and again in their ministry. I sat beside a young man at a conference some time ago, and there was a preacher up, and he occupied 45 minutes. And this young preacher was sitting by my side, and he was busily writing in his notebook. And I wondered what he was writing. So when the meeting was over, I said, "Brother, I noticed that you were very much interested in the sermon that we've just listened to." I said, "What were you writing?" He said, "Every time that man used the word I," he said, "I made a note of it." And he said, in the course of 45 minutes, he used it about 40 times. I. He was an eye specialist. You know, Dr. Luke was an entirely different individual. And this dear servant of God, Titus, although he was present at some of the most difficult situations, his name is dropped out completely in the Acts of the Apostles. But in the second epistle to the Corinthians, we find it there 9 different times. In the second epistle of the Corinthians. So the two men that I want to speak about this morning, two entirely different types, is first of all, Timothy. And then secondly, I want to look at Titus and the work that in which he was involved in the situation here in this great second missionary journey of the Apostle Paul when this tremendous work was done in these different provinces of the Roman Empire. First of all, we find here Timothy is invited by Paul to go with him to take the place of John Mark. Timothy's name is mentioned 24 times in the New Testament, and is the only man in the New Testament that's called a man of God. 1st of all, a word or two about his conversion. Apparently he was a native of Lystra, and he was there when that wonderful, wonderful gospel campaign took place when the churches of Galatia, they were founded. And it's very likely that it was then that he was converted. But that wasn't the start of the story in his life. When we turn over to the second epistle to Timothy, we find that his mother and his grandmother were wonderful Christians. And we read that from a babe, he had known the Holy Scriptures which were able to make him wise unto salvation. Apparently there was a difficulty in his home. His father was a Greek. We don't know anything at all about him. But the fact that the home was divided, it shows that there was a difficulty there, but he had a good mother, and he had a good grandmother, and the result was that from a babe, he knew the Holy Scriptures, the seed was sown in his heart. But when the evangelists, when the preachers came along, and the gospel was preached, Timothy was brought to the Lord through the ministry of the Apostle Paul. There we get his conversion. The next thing that we read about him here is that when Paul was setting off on this second missionary journey, he laid his hands upon Timothy and invited him to come along. Something said here, I think, that gives an idea of the type of an individual that he was. It said he was well reported of by the brethren at Lystra and Iconium. Not just the place where he was brought up, and possibly the place where he was converted, but in the whole area his reputation had spread abroad. That is a lovely commendation connected with him. And then when we look at the first epistle of Timothy and other passages in the pastoral epistles, we get a little bit about his character. Apparently Timothy was a very self-effacing, timid kind of an individual. He was shy. He wasn't a pusher. He was a person that needed encouragement. You know, there's some people and they need a wet blanket. Always pushing themselves forward. Now, Timothy wasn't that type at all. He was the type that needed somebody to get behind him and give him a little encouragement. And three times over, Paul, in speaking about him, he said, "Don't be ashamed, don't be ashamed, don't be ashamed." Shy, bashful, timid, this was something that characterized him. Not only that, but he didn't have a robust body. Paul, in speaking to him, he said, "Take a little wine for your stomach's sake and for your often infirmities." So it seems that he wasn't a very strong individual as far as his body was concerned. So these are things that show us the type of an individual that he was. But when we look at the work that he did, when we come to his career, we find him in four different situations. And the first one was at Thessalonica. We find that Paul, he had been at Thessalonica. He had been there for 3 weeks, three Sabbath days. And the result of the work at Thessalonica, we find that an assembly had been planted. But apparently, there were some things connected with the work at Thessalonica that Paul had to leave. He had to leave hurriedly. And the result was that his teaching that he had given apparently hadn't been properly understood. But in any case, Paul, in speaking to Timothy, he said, "I want you to go to Thessalonica." And the word that he uses is, "Comfort them concerning their faith." Now that was the first mission that he had. Comfort them concerning the faith. Apparently, in the meantime, after Paul had left, some of the believers there had died, and they weren't too sure what had happened to them. We know that later on, when Paul wrote the two epistles, 1st and 2nd Thessalonians, there's a lovely body of teaching there concerning the Lord's coming and what happens to the spirit of the believer when they die. But apparently this wasn't clear. And Paul said to Timothy, now, he said, "I want you to go to Thessalonica and comfort them concerning the faith." And that mission was a complete success. If we read 1 Thessalonians chapter 3, we find that after he had been there and came back and reported to the Apostle Paul, both of them were filled with joy because that mission had been a complete success. You know, beloved, here this morning, I believe we need a ministry of comfort at the present time. Everywhere we go, we hear stories about difficulties and problems among the people of God. And we need men of character that's able to go in and out among the people of God and comfort them. And Timothy, not only his disposition, but his background, he was perfectly fitted for that type of work. Everywhere we go, we hear about broken homes. We hear about delinquent children. And as we were hearing yesterday, the home is under attack. And everywhere we go, we hear about people that are in the hospital. And we badly need men that's able to go in and out among the assemblies and comfort them concerning the faith. Now that first mission that Timothy had was a complete success, and it gave a tremendous amount of joy to the Apostle Paul when Timothy came back and reported. We get the whole story in 1 Thessalonians chapter 3. Now, about 5 years later, there was a situation arose at Corinth. And I don't need to go into all the detail about it. There was no assembly that gave more heartache to the Apostle Paul than the assembly at Corinth. You remember when Paul wrote that first epistle to them, from beginning to end, it is all correction. First of all, there was a tendency to division. I'm of Paul, I'm of Apollos, I'm of Cephas, I'm of Christ. And apparently there was a tendency there in Corinth to divide up into little cliques and parties and to separate one from the other. And if that had been allowed to continue, it could have meant division. It hadn't actually happened in division, but at least the tendency was there. That was the first thing. And then the second thing, there was a case of immorality that they hadn't taken any action in discipline at all. And then as you go on through the epistle, there are about 11 or 12 different problems at Corinth. It was in a terrible shape, terrible state. And apart from these problems, they were actively criticizing the man who had gone in among them and had been responsible for founding the assembly, and they were asking for his credentials. Where's your letter? And Paul must have felt it terribly, terribly. The very fact that the man who had been responsible for founding the assembly and building it up and had labored night and day for 18 months among them, that actually they were pulling him apart and saying unkind things about him and wanting to know what his authority was to be called an apostle. Now, the next thing that Paul did, he asked Timothy to go to Corinth. First of all, he had a ministry of comfort at Thessalonica, but the second mission he had was a ministry of correction at Corinth. And Paul, he wrote to them, and he said, if Timothy come among you, let him be without fear, because he works the work of God as I do. But Timothy's mission there was not a success. You know, again and again, in the epistle, we read about puffed up, puffed up, puffed up. They were self-complacent, they were proud, they were critical, and so on. And I think I can see this young man, Timothy, timid and shy and bashful, not a pusher, going among these people that were critical of the Apostle Paul. And his mission there was not a success. And he had to leave and come back and report to the Apostle Paul the condition of things. And it caused a good deal of sadness to the Apostle that Timothy, he was not a success in that mission. He had asked Apollos to go, and he didn't want to go. Apollos, the man that was eloquent, and the man that was mighty in the scriptures, when Paul asked him to go, he said it wasn't his mind to go. It was too difficult a situation, and he refrained from going. And as far as the Apostle Paul himself was concerned, he couldn't go. And all he could do was sit down and write a letter to them, and that was the first epistle to the Corinthians. So Timothy's first mission was a complete success. It was a ministry of comfort. But the second one, a ministry of correction. He wasn't the man to go there on account of his, on one hand, his youth and his whole makeup. He wasn't the individual to go and tackle a difficult situation like that. Well, now the third mission he had was at Ephesus. And there it was confrontation. And when we read the first epistle to Timothy, we find the situation there at Ephesus, and Paul sent him there. And I think that the mission that he had there was a success. We get a complete set of instructions in 1 Timothy, and later in 2 Timothy, it's added to. the mission there at Ephesus, I think, was successful. But the final mission he had was a mission of companionship with the Apostle Paul. You know, Paul and Timothy, they had been associated together for over 20 years. And it was a beautiful, beautiful example of the older man and the younger man working happily together. I think that's a lovely thing to see a man, an older man of experience, and a younger man that needs the help of the older man working together. I remember when I first of all went out into the work of the Lord, there was an old preacher in Ireland. I'm not going to tell you his name, but he was a man of very, very great wisdom and knowledge. And I was 21 years of age. And as I was leaving to go to Africa, he shook my hand and he says, "Brother, in the work of the Lord, you'll need three things." I said, "What's that?" Well, he said, "First of all, you'll need a head like a wise father." And he said, "Secondly, you'll need a heart like a loving mother." And he said, "The third thing you'll need is a hide like a rhinoceros." You need the head and the heart and the hide. Now, Timothy may have had the head, and he certainly did have the heart. He had a heart of a loving mother, but unfortunately he did not have the hide of a rhinoceros. But oh, thank God, he was a dear, dear servant of God. And that's a relationship between Paul and Timothy. It lasted for 20 years, and at the end, just before Paul is executed, he writes to Timothy, and he says, "Timothy," he said, "I'm here in this prison, in the Mamertine prison here in Rome." He said, "I'm cold." He said, "I want that cloak that I left at Troas." He said, "I want something for my body." He says, "Bring the cloak. I'm cold and I need something for my body." And he said, "Bring the books and the parchments." He said, "I want something for my mind. Something to occupy my mind in these difficult days here in the prison." But he said, "Timothy," he said, "I want you." And three times over in that last few sentences in the second epistle of Timothy, he says, "Come, come, come. Come quickly. Come before winter." He says, "Timothy, I want something for my body. I want something for my mind." But he said, "I want something for my heart. Please come." Oh, that ministry of companionship, the older man and the younger man, I think it's a delightful picture. Timothy, at the end, he had that joy of coming. And I venture to think that at the end, he said, "Only Luke is with me. Dear Dr. Luke, only Luke is with me." And I venture to say that Timothy was there too. And at that great last moment of the apostle's life, I venture to say that these were his companions when he had to face execution outside the city of Rome. So here is Timothy, in his career. First of all, it was a ministry of comfort. Then it was a ministry of correction that was not a success. And then he had that ministry of consolidation at Ephesus, but finally the ministry of companionship with God's dear servant. So that's a little outline of this man, Timothy. I want to do the same with Titus. When we were looking at the work in Galatia, you remember there was that tremendous crisis that arose. It was one of the first great crises in the ministry of the Apostle Paul. They had done pioneer work there at Galatia, and after those churches at Antioch and Iconium, Derbe and Lystra, after they had been formed, we read that some men from Jerusalem They came right on their heels after the work had been done, and they said, now look, you Gentiles, if you want to be real believers and in fellowship with your brethren, the first thing you have to do is get circumcised and observe the law of Moses. What they wanted to do was to turn them into Jewish proselytes. And if they had gotten away with it, it would have completely altered the whole course of Christianity. It was a serious crisis. As a matter of fact, there were three great crises in the ministry of the Apostle Paul. The first and possibly one of the most serious was what happened there at Galatia. The very foundations of the gospel was being undermined by these men, wanting these people to become Jewish proselytes instead of Gentile believers, free from the law, and going on with God after they had been saved. So, here is the crisis. Now, the Apostle Paul, when he heard what was happening, the whole story is told in Acts chapter 15. There was the council at Jerusalem. They went to the source of the trouble. And among those that went there was Titus. Now, the only place that we find that is in the Epistle of the Galatians. It's not mentioned in the Acts of the Apostles at all. But Titus, he came as a typical Gentile believer. Possibly he came from Antioch. And he came with the Apostle Paul, and he was the typical Gentile there that came to represent the Gentiles in the church at Antioch and in the Galatian churches. You know, when Titus was there, we read that there was much disputing. And you know, controversy is never pleasant. I don't know what you feel about argument. We do get the word disputing. And certainly over this whole question, there was a lot of disputing. If there's one thing I hate, it's argument. I happen to be an Irishman. And you know, a good many Irishmen, they love to argue. As far as I'm concerned, I hate it. It's just like drawing thorns across my flesh. I hate people sitting down, argue. And that was the atmosphere there at that conference at the beginning. But Titus was there, and he was the representative of the Gentile believers. Now, there's three things he could have done. First of all, he could have submitted to what these people were demanding, to be circumcised and to observe the law of Moses and all the rest of it. But he didn't. A second thing he could have done is, you know, I hate the atmosphere here. I don't like all this argument and disputing that's going on. And he could have taken his hat and gone home and dropped the whole thing. An apostle of peace at any price. But he didn't do that. What Titus did, he stood up like a man. And here is the representative of the Gentile believers. And thank God, the whole situation was cleared up. After some time, I believe that the Holy Spirit took control of the thing, and the whole situation was saved. And the letter was written and sent to the Gentile believers concerning the decision that had come to about salvation and the gospel. But it was the first great crisis in the ministry of the Apostle Paul in his pioneer work. Secondly, he had another one at Corinth. And when we think of what happened at Corinth and what was said to him there, we've already referred to Timothy. Now, where Timothy was not able to help the situation at Corinth, when we read the second epistle to the Corinthians, we find that the second mission of Titus was to go to Corinth. He was a diplomat. He was a man, possibly an older man, a man that was able to keep his temper. A man that was able to stand upon his feet, that had solid convictions about things. And the name I'd like to put upon him, he was a Christian statesman and a Christian diplomat. On three different times, we read that Titus, he went to Corinth, and he was the man that was responsible for resolving the situation there in that difficult, difficult church. That was the second situation where we find him. Now we find him again. Towards the end, we find that Paul, in writing to him, he said, I want you to go to Crete. And he said, in Crete, he said, there's a very difficult situation there too. And there's a term used in the first chapter of the epistle to Titus. And it's really a strong, strong indictment of conditions at Crete. It says the Cretans are always liars, evil wild beasts, and lazy gluttons. Can you imagine anything stronger than that? Always liars, evil wild beasts, and lazy gluttons. That is John Nelson Darby's translation of what was said. And Paul described them as that. And he said, even your own people, that is the way they describe conditions there at Crete. Now I said, Titus, when you go there, there are two things I want you to do. The first one is to straighten them out. Set in order the things that are lacking. Straighten them out. Set in order the things that are lacking. And then secondly, ordain elders in every city. Ordain elders in every church. That was the twofold mission that he had there.